Remember the days of the Eon. Remember the days of the Eon. When was the last time any of you said this to one another? Hey, Joe.
Yes?
Remember the days of the Eon. Or maybe it's this way. Remember the days of the Eon? It depends on the inflection. Remember the days of the Eon. No, I think the second choice was better. Remember the days of the Eon. Hello, everyone. Martin Zenner. That is verse 7 of Deuteronomy chapter 32, which passage is referenced by John in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. Remember the days of the Eon. This is important information for Israel because in her stressful indignation, she is going to really be relying on the fact that she has a rich history with God, during which He protected her. He brought her through so many trials, brought her through the wilderness, brought her through Egypt, across the Red Sea, and it is important to have an oral history. Before things were written down, ladies and gentlemen, the earth was ripe and rife with oral history because it was important in the day to be able to recognize your history because it gave you a stability for the present. The old track record, to put a modern twist on it, and Israel certainly has a track record with God. And the next sentence is, understand the years of generation after generation. He doesn't just want them to recall the times, but they must understand why these times were important. The reason is that God has protected them. He's never left them. He's never forsaken them. This is vital information for Israel to have in the time they are going through here. When the allotment, the Supreme, made to the nations, when He parted the sons of Adam, He stationed the boundaries of the peoples for the number of the sons of Israel. That's a tough little phrase there. Don't tackle this one without a little help here. I mean, go ahead. If you can do it, fantastic. But from this, we're going to see, I'm going to lend you my understanding of this passage. Let me read it again. When He parted the sons of Adam. Now, He begins this with the allotment the Supreme made to the nations. God made an allotment with the nations. He sent nations certain places to be in certain places, and He did that according to where His nation Israel was. So this tells you how Israel-centric God is. And this is important for Israel to know because they're going to think that God has left them. They're going to think that because the nations are surrounding them to kill them, that therefore God has abandoned them. But that is so not the case because the very nations who are pursuing Israel, their boundaries were set according to God's determined program in relation to the nation Israel. So it's like somebody says, okay, I live in Anchorage, Alaska. And the question is, okay, well, where is that in relation to Israel? I live in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Okay, that's how far from Israel? You see, everything is related to Israel. You remember the show MASH on television, and they had that signpost there that said how many thousands of miles to Los Angeles. They were fighting a war in Korea at the time, but everything was in relation to, say, the U.S., because it was a comforting place from which to base all your other calculations. Home and hearth, right? And so this is the same thing we're seeing here. God says, look, not only have I not forsaken you, but all these nations that are now coming after you, I apportioned their allotment on the earth in relation to my place for you, my place where I've settled you on the earth. So He parted the sons of Adam. What is Adam doing mentioned in this passage? It's that even in Adam, God saw through Adam's progeny into what He would do with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. When He parted the sons of Adam. Now, the sons of Adam were a unit for many, many hundreds of years, I think. And then at the Tower of Babel, there was a concentrated effort to form a concentrated government. Well, God split up the nations at that point. And when he split them up, he made their boundaries. He stationed the boundaries of the people. Stationed, again, active verb. It tells you what God is doing. And when you think that nations are just helter-skelter, scattered upon the earth, they're not. They're not. He parted the sons of Adam, stationed the boundaries of the peoples for the number of the sons of Israel. He knows the number. He knows how many there are of each folk stem, of each nation on the earth, especially Israel. Jacob is the line of his allotment. Jacob is the line. So Jacob comes out of Adam eventually, and this is the line that God has in mind to become his people and to eventually use these people to bring the knowledge of God to the earth as the waters cover the sea. Jacob is the line of his allotment. This really reminds me of the passage in Job where God says through Job that he calls forth the sea and he says, "Thus shall your proud waves stop." Thus far and no farther is the quote. He calls up the waves, and the waves and the sea in scripture are always typical of the mass of humanity. But it's really not a mass, as if it's an indistinct, indiscriminately placed blob of human beings. No, but he calls each nation, he calls humanity thus far. Here is where you stop. I'm stopping this border here, this border here, this border here. This is really what Jesus does when he returns. In Matthew 25, we have Jesus Christ returning to the earth, and he more directly now takes his hand and putting nations where he wants them on the planet. And how is that decision made? In accord with how they treated his people Israel. So you see, that's consistent. In this book of the unveiling, and in the book we're referencing now, Deuteronomy, we see how Israel-centric God is. This is a comfort to his people when God says, "Look, you've been in my mind the whole time. Even the nations that are after you, I apportion them according to you." It's everything like, how did you treat Israel? How far are you from Israel? Where are you? Again, Israel's the geographical center of the earth. There's someplace in Kansas that's the geographical center of the U.S. on earth. It's Jerusalem, in fact. So, wow. God, you've been that, concern's not the right word. We've been that important to you this whole time, and this is why they are being asked, told to go back to the Song of Moses, because this was Moses' epic poem, epic song, that was recorded and that now is being recalled for the sake of people in trouble. And there's nothing more comforting when you're in trouble than to know that it's not a strange thing, that the trouble is not random, and it's not that God has abandoned you. That's the first thing people think when trouble comes. Where's God? What happened to God? He must not like me anymore. He must have abandoned me. Nothing could be further from the truth, and nothing can emphasize that more than to say, remember the days of the eon. Remember. Understand the years of generation after generation after generation, because people come, people go, people live, people die. Yet God has been consistently not only active, but God has been consistently operating in your midst, Israel. Now, this is why I don't want you to read this and think that you are going to find your evangel here. But you see, God has a very large brain. Not literally. He doesn't have a brain, because if he had a brain, he would have to have a skull. And if he had a skull, he would have to have the fissures in the cranial on the bone, which means that when he was a baby, he had a soft spot, got a little soft spot, and it grew together. No, this figure of speech, God's brain, God's mind, God's lips, God's mouth, all figurative. The point I'm conveying with the figure of God's brain is that it's compartmentalized. He is this part for Israel, this part for us. Oh, he can multitask. Believe it. God is a multitasker. So when you go to Ephesians or you go to Colossians or Romans, you're reading about his all concern for us. And we are the thrust of his concern in Paul's letters. But these aren't Paul's letters, are they? No. These are letters written to Israel, and the comfort to them at this time is that even though they're in dire stress, dire extremity, they have a history with this God. And again, nothing could possibly be more comforting than that. Just when you think you've been abandoned, no, you're established. And not only are you established in your eventual home in Jerusalem, that metropolis that everybody wants to go to, but you were called and you were set apart while you were in a wilderness. This is transadministrational truth. I want to get on this tomorrow because I don't have time for it today, because the next line is this: he is finding him, that is Jacob, in a land that is wilderness and in a waste, howling desolation. Howling desolation. Holly, that's your cue. Come on, start barking. Give us the arrr. No, the dog's never there when you need it. A howling desolation. Could have used Holly there, but no. Holly let me down. So this whole passage is just suffused with comfort of how important Israel is to God, and how, in fact, though she be stripped of her power, though she be stripped of every visible earthly advantage, she is still the pupil in God's eye. She is still the love of his heart as presented here. And if it's this way with Israel, and it is, it's so much greater with us. And I'll be touching on that more tomorrow as well. This has been Martin Zender from The Laundry Room. Do not fear desolations. Do not fear the wilderness. Do not fear when you can't see anything, because we have a deeper history with God even than Israel.